We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, I'll preview an upcoming concert from the Indian-American vocalist Falu. She'll be performing with the American Patchwork Quartet on Thursday, August 10th at the Cabaret. But first, we'll hear new releases from two important Indianapolis musicians, Hannah Ben and Jordan Munson. We'll start with the composer and vocalist, Hannah Ben. Hannah has had an extraordinary year. As a vocalist, she was featured on the Oscar-nominated soundtrack for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Hannah also provided vocals for the new album from Michelle Ndege Ocello. Watch it burn. As a composer, Hannah's composition, View Untitled, was premiered at Carnegie Hall by the Orpheus Chamber Orchestra. In just a moment, we'll listen to Hannah's new single, The Line, recorded with D'Anthony Parks. But first, let's hear an excerpt from my recent conversation with Hannah Ben. A few years ago, there was a meme of you that went viral online. I think it was a cell phone video of you singing Hildegard von Bingen's music in a cathedral somewhere in Europe. And it was captioned something along the lines of the most beautiful thing you'll hear, you'll ever hear. It seems like the industry and the rest of the world is catching up with this meme and what the people who saw this meme responded to years ago. How does that feel? Does it feel like the industry and your peers in the music community are catching up with all the talent and this wealth of talent you have to share with the world?
A little bit, but it more feels that I feel more comfortable sharing. I go from different genres, doing a cross-genre thing all the time. So for somebody looking into my world, I think it's often hard to find exactly where that is to spear, or they don't know what they're looking for, really. So I think more things are, I'm in the process of those things being realized, so it's more clear. I think the world could be catching up, but I think it's me catching up, you know? I think, I've been working a lot behind the scenes, so I'm just excited for this year and the year upcoming. I have a lot that I'll be letting go and releasing.
Is there anything you have coming up in the future that you'd want to share with people? I know you're still working on your what will become your debut full-length solo album. Yeah, any plans you want to share coming up this year?
I actually do have a single that is slated for next month. It is not my solo project, but it is a duo project with my partner, D'Anthony Parks.
That's exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing that. And finally, Hannah, at this point in your career, you could live and work anywhere in the world, I'm sure. You maintain a residence here in Indianapolis. What keeps you rooted here in your hometown, Indianapolis?
Family, really, when it comes down to it. And familiarity. You know, I just, because of the job that I have, I have to travel, and I often kind of miss being, you know, just the Midwest, just simple living. Not to say that Indianapolis is simple, because it is absolutely not. But I think being far away from family for a long time had kind of just gotten boring for me. So it's really just family and being around friends from my past and who've always been there for me.
It seems like this has been a good place for you to create as well. You've had this, you know, very notable creative patch over the last couple of years. Is Indianapolis a good place for you creatively?
Yes, because I think it's that comfort level, too. It's not, you know, with the larger cities that I lived in, maybe I had like distractions or also, you know, to have sustainability. So I think being in a place that's more comfortable and also I'm not spending, you know, too much on rent, it's nice.
This is Hannah Benn and DeAnthony Parks with The Line. Heart cannot break, I have no memory, I left my face. That was Hannah Benn and DeAnthony Parks with The Line. Up next, we'll hear new music from the Indianapolis composer, percussionist, and multimedia artist, Jordan Munson. Jordan is also a senior lecturer of music and arts technology at IUPUI. The New York Times has described Jordan's music as merging acoustic melody and electronic rhythm with thrilling purpose. Jordan is featured on a new album from Sun Lux. That record is titled Alternate Forms, and it features 9 collaborative pieces, reworking tracks from the 2013 Sun Lux release, Lanterns. I'll share Jordan's contribution to that record in a moment. But first, let's listen back to a 2018 interview I recorded with Jordan Munson, as he shares how his work as a percussionist led him into composition.
So yeah, percussion was my more serious, I guess, investment into music. But really, the same time I was doing that in school, I had this interest to create original, you know, compositions or have, I don't know if it was about control. I wanted to make everything myself, and it was around the time, like late 90s, where you could really start to do that in a home studio type environment. Got into some music software that was kind of entry level at the point at that time, and did a whole album of these like really epic, you know, 15 minute electronic music pieces. I think it was like a 70 minute album. And so what I wanted to do in college actually was go to school for composition, and I auditioned and applied to a lot of places, IU Bloomington, interviewed there, and really none of that panned out. And so I ended up going to University of Kentucky for percussion, which just happens to, you know, I'm from Kentucky, but it just happens to have like nationally recognized percussion program. And so it was like a very serendipitous, you know, turn of events. And there, it was an interesting time where that studio, that program was shifting to more like new music focus, and a lot of my peers there were interested in, you know, what, you know, the new classical music, new composition, a lot of stuff from John Luther Adams and Matthew Burton, or all these new composers. As I got more comfortable there, you know, sort of while I was practicing and trying to be as good as people that I'll never be as good at, as in terms of percussion performance, I started thinking about, you know, composing again and, or connecting those two worlds. I was doing a lot of jazz or sort of free improv in college at the time. all that was kind of separate to me at the time. You know, this idea that you would compose or be a composer and performer in this classical area. And so I was just kind of working on all that stuff in college, and that really started getting me interested in involving technology in composition or writing in a more sophisticated way. You know, because my experience at the time was just working in things like, it's jargony, but working in like Logic, working in some things that, just using tools that already exist. And I was hitting a wall, and I wanted to start learning how to build those tools for myself or do things that were, you know, more customizable, just to create a situation where people don't quite understand how that sound is being made or how the magic of it is happening. So that's how I came here.
From the new Sun Lux album, Alternate Forms, this is No Crimes, New History, featuring Jordan Munson and Isaiah Robinson. That was Sun Lux with No Crimes, New History, featuring Jordan Munson and Isaiah Robinson. Up next, we'll listen back to my 2022 interview with the Grammy-winning Indian-American vocalist Falu. She'll be performing with the American Patchwork Quartet on Thursday, August 10th at the Cabaret, located at 924 North Pennsylvania Street in Indianapolis. Falu's music combines North Indian classical music with influences of pop, rock, and folk music. She calls this style Indie Hindi. Falu has collaborated with a stunning list of musicians, from A.R. Rahman to Philip Glass. Let's hear an example of her work. From her 2013 album, Forest Road, this is Falu with Gumar. That was Falu with Gumar. Falu will be performing in Indianapolis with the American Patchwork Quartet on Thursday, August 10th at the Cabaret. I spoke with Falu last year, and we discussed her study of North Indian classical music.
My training is in Indian classical North Indian style. There are two, Hindustani and Carnatic. Hindustani is the North Indian music. Carnatic is the South. So my training is in Hindustani, North Indian style of music from really amazing legendary gurus. One of them happened to tour with the Beatles. His name was Ustad Sultan Khan, and he is a sarangi player, amazing, legendary, world-renowned sarangi player. And my mother was my first teacher. So she spotted a talent in me at 3 years old, when I was 3 years old, and She's trained me from that early on. Then I went to Komadi Munshi, who trained me in Banaras School of Music with the semi-classical styles, which is Dadra, Tumri, Ghazal, Chaiti, Hori. And then I went to Ustad Sultan Khasa, which is the one that toured with Beatles. And I learned the classical aspect of music, which is very, very old. It's passed on for 11 generations, I being the 11th one. orally passed on, because we don't write our music. It is one-on-one taught by teacher to the disciple, guru to the student, and generations have learned like that, me being the 11th one. And then I also learned from Kishori Amonkar, who is another Jaipur style of music. I learned that, and I learned light music, a little bit Bollywood singing, from Uday Mazumdar. So my training has been so resourceful, but also very brutal. We used to sing for 16 hours a day, practice for 16 hours, and I did that for 10 years at least.
Wow.
And sometimes we also did 40 days of really resort practices, which is called chilla, where you go in one room, you sit in that room from sunrise to sunset without getting up, 12 hours, and you sing one melodic scale over and over without stopping. So that happens for 40 days, where you eat the same food, you sing the same scale, and you wear the same two pair of clothes that you wash and wear the next day.
Wow. That sounds like a brutal schedule. As a young person, how did you manage that? You just wanted to sing so badly, you were just willing to put yourself through the discipline? How did you manage to survive that?
Well, I think at six years, I was hospitalized with a bicycle accident. And in that hospital room, the pain that I was having, the headaches were so brutal that I was screaming. So my mother said in the room, she said, "Don't scream, sing." And I started singing, and the healing that my musical notes gave me was so much more serene, more than even the medicines. So at that young age of six, I decided that music has a bigger scope of healing, not just entertainment. Mm-hmm. It is a powerhouse that we can actually draw from our ancient roots of Indian ragas, Indian melodic scales that have emotional and really healing surfaces to them, layers to them. And when used in the right way, I felt like it helped me heal faster. So at six, I wanted to just be a musician. I didn't want to do anything. I started singing in that hospital room and I did not stop. I was pretty, driven child. I was not somebody who would sit idle. Always was curious. I had this sense of wonder in music. And I wanted to always learn. Even now I'm a student. I'm a lifelong student. So learning is a very inner need I have. And learn and then keep working on what my gurus have taught me and passing it on to the next generation is something that really gives me a lot of joy. So yes, I never got bored of practicing. In fact, the more I practiced, the more I knew how much I don't know, how much I don't know about music that I need to learn. So it's kind of an ocean. The deeper you go, you realize there's so much more to swim.
You studied with the sarangi player Ustad Sultan Khan, who's one of my favorite musicians and is an icon of North Indian classical music, right? He's been a major figure in the history of Indian music, and I believe he died a few years ago. What was that experience like studying with such a great, revered master?
I think those were the best years of my life, because Ustad Sultan Khan not only taught me in India, but after I immigrated to America, he used to come and stay with us. Me and my husband, we both sing. We are both his students. So my husband was a medical student, and he used to come in our medical dorm and live with us in a dorm and teach us. And the hours of learnings that we did with him for 11, sometimes he would teach us for 11 hours. And we were not allowed to get up. And he had to go work next day or, go to med school. And it was, but the teachings and the approach of music that he showed us was so much more valuable than any any lessons I could learn in any university, right? So how do you approach a note, or how do you think of a musical phrase, or how do you think of certain notes that can evoke certain emotions in your raga and then affect that other person in that way? It's a very scientific way of dissecting the 12 notes that we have, the musical 12 notes. And I think we both, Gaurav is my husband and me, we both were just floating with him for all the years he came. He stayed with us for 2 months, 3 months sometimes. And we used to drive him everywhere. We used to make food for him. We used to do his laundry. Like he was so much more than a guru. He was like a spiritual guide. A guide that the light always shines in you. Every time we would doubt something, that when is something going to happen with us in our career, or when can we see the light of the Almighty when we sing, he would always say, just forget about everybody else, just sing for your inner self. And those kinds of teachings are so rare, and these days especially, but when you have a legend directing every movement in your music, it's just the biggest gift that we both received.
Cultural Manifesto will return with more words and music from Falu after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, we're listening back to my 2022 conversation with the Grammy-winning Indian-American vocalist Falu. She'll be performing in Indianapolis with the American Patchwork Quartet on Thursday, August 10th, at the Cabaret. Falu's music combines a wide range of styles, from North Indian classical music to pop. She's also worked extensively in electronic dance music, collaborating with producers including Pretty Lights, Paul Oakenfold, Nicodemus, and Quantic. Let's return to my conversation with Falu as we discuss her work in electronic music. Falu, there's one really unique aspect of your music that I'm excited to ask you about. I'm a DJ. I play many different styles of electronic music in nightclubs and different venues. And, you know, I didn't realize this until recently, but I had been hearing your voice for so long and never kind of put the puzzle pieces together. You've collaborated and recorded and performed with many prominent electronic music producers, from Karsh Kale to Nicodemus and Quantic. You have this really incredible sort of catalog of music within that genre alone. Can you tell me about your work with some of these electronic music producers? And is that something you're personally interested in at all?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. I found... So back then, you know, in the early 2000s, Karsh and DJ Rekha were bringing this new Asian sounds to New York. Mm. And he invited, it's because of Ustad Sultan Khan, my guru, he invited me to sing on his albums, Realize and Liberation. And I got this fantastic opportunity and honor to tour with him. So I toured with Karsh and his band. It was called Realize Live, and we played Hollywood Bowl. And I kind of loved what Quantic and Nicodemus and Kush and everyone was doing, it was so different than my training, right? I am like Indian classical ragas, and they're making this raga and putting this really awesome grooves and making the sound from, you know, turntables and amazing, all these tools that I never even saw. So when I used to go and perform in Hollywood Bowl with Paul Oakenfield, and the crowd would just like, you know, how it's such a different experience of EDM versus sitting in a mehfil in India, right? Imagine somebody straight from, like, I was the FOB, fresh off boat. I went, it was so fun though. It was, the journey was, I didn't even know music could be looked at in such a great electronic way. And I absolutely loved everything we created. We wrote songs with Nicodemus, I wrote, and then even Quantic, that Albela song.
Yeah, I love that.
He and I got together and he's like, how do you see music, right? So his questions were so right on. And he took me into places of my heart and soul that I never have been to. So the greatness about these this genre, electronic genre, is the way they see music is so different yet so similar. So absolutely, like EDM is my all-time favorite genre. It's my, I listen to a lot of, you know, DJs that I sometimes go in the Pretty Lights is my favorite also. I love going to their shows. And one time I performed with them.
Wow.
So opportunities like that, when they come, I grab them because I find it's very inspiring to me to look inside more and see, discover what I have to offer.
I'm curious how you view electronic music in the evolution of Indian music. You know, it's a big part of course, popular music with people like DJ Shadow of Dubai doing all these Bollywood remixes. And then you have people like Kersh Kalay or Talvin Singh who are doing things that incorporate strands of classical music. What is the role of electronic music in the evolution of Indian music?
Very big, super big. And the sooner we acknowledge and we embrace that sound, the better it is for Indian music. Because what is happening is, if Kersh picks up a little piece of Indian alap, you know, an alap, an improvisation piece, right? Mm-hmm. And he puts it in the electronic way, the filters that they use and all that, right? That alap, the sample, becomes the signature of that song that he has produced. But where does it come from? So the roots are also coming in. So the 5,000 years roots are coming in such a beautiful, sparkling way, a very new way. And Indian people can then now see their raga, see their melodic scale in a very different fashion. So I think the marriage is very, very natural. And I would love to do something in that direction where I can incorporate all these beautiful compositions that Sultan Khan has given me and maybe try to create some, you know, a theme song. And also the similarity that people might know is, you know, when how in EDM there's a song, it starts and then it builds, right? And then there's a drop, right? In classical music, we have that too. So in alap, we build, and then at the end of that 40 minutes of improvisation, we hit the sa, and that's the climax. And after sa, there is like a little, like a calmness. And I found that concept so my own, meaning I didn't find it foreign when I heard it in EDM. The build and the drop and the build and the drop is so universal, and it's so Indian, it's so deep-rooted in my culture too. So yes, absolutely, very, very excited if opportunities come to collaborate with, you know, like-minded people, electronic musicians who find commonalities with me, I would jump on that.
Falu, you coined a phrase to describe the music you were making in the United States during the early 2000s. You coined the phrase indie Hindi, right?
Yes.
tell me what that means to you.
So obviously everything that I've learned, folk, Indian classical, semi-classical, that's all old, right? It's mm-hmm. passed on. It's at least 3,000 years old. And when you bring those essences, the fluidity of that culture into America, and the instrumentation is not necessarily Indian. It is a bass, it is a keyboard, it's a piano, it's a guitar. The harmonies that are created in those instruments, when you are singing your phrases, first of all, that's a very unique sound, right? And you're capturing that nuance with composition based in a very old raga and English lyrics on top of it. So here we are taking the roots of Indian raga with English lyrics, but not so much that it hurts these traditions, but actually mixes it very gently without affecting the uniqueness of both, and then coloring it with American instrumentation, sometimes Indian tabla as well, and you know, sometimes Indian sarangi. But the culmination and the product of proportionality of bringing these three things together, or four, and that became, I think, a very popular sound in this area where I was trying to flourish, Indie Hindi. So that's Indie Hindi, which is age-old ancient culture coming into the modern phase, but keep drawing from both, but keeping the originality.
Falu, you released, I think, your debut solo album in 2007. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And I love this album. And there's a track on that album in particular that I wanted to ask you about. You do an extraordinary version of one of my all-time favorite pieces of music written by one of my all-time musical heroes, Dumb Morrow Dumb by R.D. Burman. You do a fantastic version of this song. And, you know, we're talking about incorporating all these stylistic influences into one's music. He was truly a master of that. Tell me about your version of this song and if R.D. Burman's music has been an influence on you.
So, you know, I have never said this in any interview, but I will tell you. My R.D. Burman was a very every weekend visitor.
Wow.
In my grandma's and my uncle's house.
Wow.
So when he, every weekend, every Saturday night or Friday night, he, Kishore Kumar, my uncle Praveen, and me, as a little child, I was 3, 4, 5 years old, just wandering there. It's, you know how we have parties and people come over and we're having drinks and dinner?
Sure.
Every weekend, R.D. Burman came to my grandfather's house, where I was there too. And they just created music. Anand Bakshi, the writer, the lyricist.
Yes.
So the way I remember these scenes precisely in my mind, where they would have a subject, a theme to work on. And I don't know if Dumb Morrow Dumb was written like that, but I know a couple of songs that they wrote in front of me. Mm. I was 3 years old, right? And they would say, the theme is this. And Anand Bakshi he would, let me show you the video. He would do this. Anand Bakshi would do this. like that with a handkerchief.
Okay.
And in 2 minutes, he would write out lyrics. And Artie Burman would then sometimes understand the language, and sometimes he would say, what does Nashaman mean? Is that a village or is that a city? What is this? And he might ask him a couple of lyrical questions, and then they would clarify. And Artie Burman would, right there in that harmonium, in that room with my uncle and Kishore Kumar, compose. And that song became the Maradam.
Wow.
Or whichever.
Yes.
So I grew up with these people. I can't tell you how blessed I am. I grew up with them having fun every weekend in my house.
I'm speechless. That's unbelievable.
And I've never shared this story. I don't know why, because nobody asked me.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes like experiences like this happen, but you don't really share it because no one really asked me.
Mm.
But my entire upbringing was with the blessings of Artie Burman, Anand Bakshi, Shakti Samant, the filmmaker, Amar Prem, or more, and of course, Ustad Sultan Khan. So how blessed can any child be who is around the best of the best?
Mm. Wow. You know what? I think what spoke to me about his music was his ability to interpret, you know, Western music styles, whether it was psychedelic rock like in Dum Maro Dum, or, you know, funk music, disco music, Latin music, whatever the case may be. How do you kind of... tell me about his music and like what it means to you and in India. Yeah.
He was a genius. Yeah. So there is a movie called Satte Pe Satta. Mm-hmm. And in that, mm-hmm. there's a song where...
Is it Seven Brides for Seven Brothers?
Like something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That kind of vocal effect. So he made singers gargle on the mic.
Yeah.
Like all the singers were... they were gargling with water. And he recorded that sound. I mean, this man was a walking genius. The way he would listen to the any object that's not even musical, he would incorporate a beer bottle in a song. He would incorporate gargling into music. What kind of brilliance is that?
Yeah, incredible. It's incredible.
And I saw that recording. Satte Pe Satta, the seven boys. Yeah, the seven brothers. I was in that studio in that recording when that gargling was happening.
It's a remake of a famous American musical, right? Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. Do you know about that? An old Hollywood movie. Yeah, I was just going to throw that out there for our listeners that may have that as a frame of reference.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Thank
I believe
you for sharing
so.
That.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story about Artie Burman. Like I said, I was obsessed with him for a long time and tried to track down all his albums and cassettes. And yeah,
I am too. And yeah. I will show you some old photographs when I see you.
Oh, please.
Of
yes.
Him having a cigarette and smoking and, you know, doing all this and having drinks in my house with my uncle. I'll show you all the pictures.
Please. Yeah. सच्ची के झूठे हैं होंठों को होंठों से कहने दे साजना ना ना अब जो मिले हैं तो बाहों को बाहों में रहने दे साजना सच्चे के झूठे हैं होंठों को होंठों से कहने दे साजना ना ना अब जो मिले हैं तो हाय रे हाय रे हाय रे साजना I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. We've been listening back to my 2022 conversation with the Indian-American vocalist Falu. Let's pause and listen to Falu's 2007 version of the Bollywood classic Dum Maro Dum, composed by R.D. Burman.
That was Falu with her version of the Bollywood classic Dum Maro Dum. And we've been listening back to my 2022 interview with Falu. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast to hear our full conversation. And you can see Falu perform live in Indianapolis with the American Patchwork Quartet on Thursday, August 10th at the Cabaret. Purchase tickets and find more information online at thecabaret.org. Let's end this week's show with Falu's 2009 collaboration with Quantic. This is Albella. I'm Kyle Long, and you've been listening to Cultural Manifesto.